NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist James Johnston. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, hello there. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you could make it. So people tend to perceive you as being quite a almost historic kind of indie figure in the history of British music. And is that something which you feel comfortable with? I mean, do you think about your legacy at this stage when you're just making a solo album? Or is it something which is easy to shrug off, and do you not think about the way people perceive you on a daily basis?
It's not... quite genuinely, it's not really anything that would cross my mind. You know, it's just trying to do something fresh and new and just lost in the process of doing it, really, without really considering people's preconceptions or my own preconceptions. It's just the struggle of how can we make this as good as possible, and where are we going to go with it, really?
Okay. Ja, ich sagte, dass viele Leute kennen den Namen James Johnston. Er ist schon ein bekannter Begriff in britischen Kreisen und auch außerhalb von Großbritannien natürlich. Ist auch bekannt wegen seiner Mitgliedschaft von Gallen Drunk. Und ich fragte ihn, ob er sich bewusst über sein Image ist, über die Wahrnehmung, die wir haben von ihm, als fast eine Art historische Person in der Geschichte der britischen Musik. Er macht sich nie Gedanken drüber. Für ihn geht es jedes Mal nur darum, er hat ein Projekt, hat ein Ziel, da möchte er drauf hinarbeiten und es soll so perfekt wie möglich sein. Wir hören jetzt ein Stück von diesem Debütalbum, das im November erscheint. The Starless Room heißt das Album. Hier ist James Johnston mit I'd Give You Anything. I'd Give You Anything von James Johnston, von dem neuen Debütalbum von ihm, das Soloalbum The Starless Room. So, why did it take you so long to make a solo album?
Well, you know, I've been doing music with Gallen Drunk and various people for a long time, and Gallen Drunk was always, in a way, you know, I'm the main songwriter in Gallen Drunk anyway, and that always felt like my sort of outlet for stuff. And we've been recording recently, actually, but we've done two records in Hamburg at Clouds Hill, the same studio, with Johann Scherer, again the same producer, and I was very aware of the fact of, well, I think the last record, the Gallen Drunk record we did, The Soul of the Hour, was a really good record, and didn't really know where to go next, and there were certain elements of it that could really tell could go somewhere different, and to try to get away from repeating ourselves or repeating myself, tried writing in a different way, and very quickly it became apparent that it had definitely gone somewhere different, and Johann agreed, and so we just started working on something with more of a blank piece of paper, and it just felt really fresh and it was really exciting to do, and could just so went in that direction. There was no sort of plan, I'm going to try and write a solo record. It's just the way the ideas were going.
Also James meint, dass er immer der Hauptsongwriter war bei Gallen Drunk, und es war eigentlich in den ganzen Jahren immer so sein Ventil gewesen, um sich künstlerisch auszudrücken. Und es hat im Prinzip seinen Bedarf abgedeckt, weil er zufrieden war als der Hauptsongwriter in der Band. Und sie haben zwei Alben gemacht in den letzten Jahren in Hamburg, in dem Clouds Hill Studio, zusammen mit Johann Scherer. Und The Soul of the Hour war das letzte Album vor zwei Jahren. Er war sehr zufrieden damit. Er meinte, es war wirklich ein besonderes Album von der Qualität her. Aber er hat schon bemerkt, als das Album entstanden ist, dass es schon Potenzial gab, ein bisschen was anderes zu machen. Also er spürte, dass es Veränderungen gab bei Gallen Drunk, Songs, die in etwas anderen Richtungen gingen. Und er kam auf die Idee dann, dass vielleicht bei den neuen Songs irgendwie ein Soloalbum draus zu machen. Es war nicht so, dass es krampfhaft so sein musste. Er hat nicht gesagt, er muss unbedingt mit seiner Solokarriere starten. Darum ging das nicht. Sondern es ging einfach nur darum, dass es im Prinzip, es schien einfach so eine natürliche Entwicklung zu sein. So what you're saying really is that the songs that you happened to write recently just seem to be more suited to as a solo venture.
Yeah, it just didn't seem that it would work in the format of the band as it is, you know. And the minute there was that sort of was taken away, the idea that it was going to be a Gallen Drunk record, it just felt like, okay, we can just do literally anything, any style. But it became very apparent that it was definitely heading in a certain direction. And you know, once you start sort of writing or recording, and you know, you respond to what's coming out just almost by chance. A lot of it was written, semi improvised at home, and I just went with what felt natural.
Okay. Ja, er merkte, als die Songs komponiert wurden, dass sie nicht so gut funktionieren würden mit Gal & Drunk. Irgendwie waren die schon anders, die fielen irgendwie aus dem Rahmen. Und er merkte dann, als er angefangen hat, die Songs zu komponieren, dass sie immer mehr in eine andere Richtung ging. Ungeeignet für Gal & Drunk. Und war es ihm klar, es sollte ein Soloalbum werden. Und er meinte, es fing ganz bescheiden an eigentlich, indem er so halbwegs die Songs zu Hause improvisiert hat. Und irgendwann haben sie eine Form angenommen, wo er dann wirklich erkannt hat, dann, ja, okay, das ist jetzt irgendwie mein neues Projekt und das wird ein Solo-Werk werden. Did you feel apprehensive about that? Because you've been around for a long time without making a solo album. So did it almost seem almost a bit late to start going down that road? Did it almost seem like, didn't Mick Jagger do his first solo album after about 30 years of the Rolling Stones?
I'd be more frightened of it sounding like the Bill Wyman solo album. But mind you, that did very well. But it was more, what worried me was, or I felt slightly anxious about, was... It was, I don't know, it's as much as I adore the sound of just a huge cacophony of feedback, and I can get as lost in that as I can listen to an orchestra or something. But to go somewhere else and to do something far more insular and internal, it's more revealing, it's more fragile, In a way, it's far more difficult, but I've just felt that it was more me, and it was just really what I wanted to do, and it was sort of more like the sort of music I actually listen to, and I just found that how much I was enjoying it. So
you wouldn't normally listen to Gal & Drunk. Not voluntarily.
I don't sit around sort of with my feet up and just pop on a Gal & Drunk record, no. I don't know if anyone does, really.
A typical kind of British self-deprecation, isn't it? Ja, er meint, dass er schon so Feedback über alles liebt, und so wie andere Leute Orchestermusik hören, dann hat er immer Feedback geliebt, und so richtig so Krachmusik zu machen, das gefällt ihm schon, hat ihm immer sehr gut gefallen. Aber er meinte, dass als dieses Album entstanden ist, dann hat er einfach bemerkt, dass es eine Freude war, einfach was anderes zu machen und in sich zu gehen. Er meinte, das ist sehr introvertiert. Wiederum, er offenbart sich damit wirklich so, er spricht wirklich aus der Seele in den Songs. Er meinte, das hat was Zerbrechliches, das Album, das eine andere Band eigentlich dann nicht so hat. Er meinte, es war letztendlich schwieriger, aber es war eine Herausforderung, ein bisschen beängstigend, ein bisschen beunruhigend, weil er das noch nie gemacht hat. Aber letztendlich ist er dann zufrieden mit dem Ergebnis. So we can hear another track now from The Starless Room. Mm. And you're talking about insular, revealing, fragile, interesting adjectives. And do you think there's a particular song on the album which tends to sum that up more than anything else? Or?
I mean, it's quite a unifying theme of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was trying to think what we'd been to. The very last track, actually, I really, really adore. And that was recorded... I played it once at home as an improv, and then I just sort of sang a gibberish over it, but kept the whole format of it and just left it exactly as it was, and then worked out the words for it. And then when we went into the studio, I think it was probably the last one we did, I didn't really rehearse it, just played it as an improv, and that's exactly what's captured on there. So it's about as fragile as you can get, and then there's just a tiny bit of string overdub on it, and that's pretty much it. And so that sort of sums that up in a way.
So that kind of reveals the your inner secrets, that song, more than anything else, you think?
quite possibly. Heart and Soul as well. There's a lot on there that's really it's very personal.
Okay. Ja, er möchte jetzt das letzte Lied auf dem Album hören, When the Wolf Calls. Er meinte, es ist auch das letzte Lied entstanden auf dem Album. Und es ist ein sehr gutes Beispiel dafür, von dieser Zerbrechlichkeit, von der er geredet hat. Also wie sensibel die neue Musik ist, die er macht als Solokünstler. Und es entstand auf Klavier, auf ganz so sanfte Weise. Er wusste gar nicht, was für Texte dazukommen sollten. Hat einfach nur ein bisschen vor sich hin gesummt und gesungen, bis er dann die Texte ausgearbeitet hat. Er meinte, das ist wirklich sehr so sparsam und sehr bodenständig gemacht, mit nur ganz wenig so Streiche als Overdub. Er meinte, es ist wirklich so ein Lied, wo man wirklich sagen kann, dass es ein Innerstes nach außen gekehrt hat. Und das hören wir jetzt, When the Wolf Calls, von dem Album The Starless Room von James Johnston. Das war When the Wolf Calls von dem neuen Soloalbum von James Johnston. The Starless Room heißt das gute Werk. Und ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. Of course, you're well known these days as a, what do you call it, like a glorified session musician. I mean, you've been like a proper member of Nick Cave's Bad Seeds. You've toured with PJ Harvey, with Lydia Lunch, really prestigious names, of course. I mean, so did it ever get to the point where you got so involved with all that that you actually lost your own creative impetus? Or is there a danger of that?
that can sort of happen, but certain things really rejuvenate you as well. Like I played and was in Faust as well, which is quite an unusual one, and I found that really just totally got me back into the whole creative process. And touring with other people and recording with other people, I think, just feeds into what you do. And if anything, it's either, if you work with someone else for a long time, then it's a joy to go back to your own thing, but you're also feeding in other stuff that you've been learning, and it all comes out in the end result somehow. And I've always found it a really positive thing, actually. I really, really enjoy playing with other people.
Yeah, but it obviously is time-absorbing, obviously.
It's massively so. I mean, at the moment, the tour for the Hope Six Demolition Project, the new PJ Harvey album, which also Terry Edwards from Gannon Drunk is on and touring, it's a very long tour, and so, for example, as a result, my gigs for the Starless Room will probably be in February now, because we've got so much stuff to do with Polly's record.
Right, okay. Yes, yeah, so this is what I'm saying, you know, because it can just sort of rob so much time, but it's a valuable experience as well for you.
Oh, God, absolutely. Yeah. No, I absolutely adore it,
And do you think that... Do you tend to compare yourself to other artists when you, for example, working with somebody who was almost like a celebrity, really, Polly Harvey, to a lesser extent, Lydia Lunch? But do you actually get to the stage where you start comparing yourself in terms of artistry or whatever, or is it just like a completely different ballgame?
It is totally different. You know, it's their thing, but you start recognising certain similarities or certain differences in the way people work or the way people write, and I find that fascinating. You know, I mean, I've just been recording something with Polly for a play that's going to be on opening in Belfast soon, called The Nest, and then it'll be moving to London, and we recorded the soundtrack to that over the last 2 days before I came out here. And it's odd, you know, because I've known, for example, I've known her since we did gigs together in something like 1990 or 1991, but we hadn't actually really recorded anything like the two of us together before. And it was such...
Well, that's before she started, wasn't it, I thought?
So that's about the time of her first single.
Right,
We played some gigs together in a pub called The White Horse in London.
Oh, cool.
I don't know, it's just really nice how all these things come together after a while, you know. Certain people who are maybe just very single-minded, who just keep ploughing away, doing your thing, and eventually the paths cross again, or you meet people who are on the same, who have the same sort of mindset, and it's just really lovely getting together to record with people, and working with Nick Cave and all that stuff. No, it's a massively positive thing, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say, you know, you go back such a long way with Polly Harvey, and when you kind of meet up again, like 15 years later, whatever, or 20 years later, is the same spark then still there? Is it like just starting completely afresh? Is it not comparable to what you went through with her in those very early days, or does it seem...
Oh, I mean, I could barely remember what we... You know, we did this... in 93... We ended up supporting... Gal and Drunk were supporting PJ Harvey when she had her original three-piece. And we did a huge tour of Europe and a huge tour of the States. And we were all, you know, we were all pretty young and it was all very fresh and new. And I think it was probably quite a nice sort of sunshine glow memory for everyone. So it was really great getting back together again after such a long time.
Yeah. Ja, er sagt, dass er sehr viel mit anderen Musikern zusammengearbeitet hat, also unabhängig von seiner eigenen Arbeit mit Gal and Drunk und unabhängig von seiner Soloarbeit. Und ich sagte, dass es bekannt ist, dass er mit PJ Harvey zusammengearbeitet hat. Gerade jetzt ist er auf Tour mit ihr gewesen oder ist immer noch auf Tour mit ihr im Rahmen des Albums Hope Six Demolition Project. Und Terry Edwards von Gal and Drunk ist auch mit dabei. Und deshalb seine Solo-Tournee ist nach hinten verschoben und das kann er erst im Februar machen, weil er mit Polly noch viel unterwegs ist. Und er hat gerade mit ihr auch einen Soundtrack zusammen komponiert, The Nest. Und das wird bald in einem Theater ist ein Theaterstück. Und sie haben die Soundtrack-Musik dazu gemacht und das läuft bald in Belfast. Und er hat aber schon sehr, es ist ein sehr uraltes Verhältnis mit Polly Harvey. 1991 war das erste Mal, dass sie was zusammen gemacht haben. Und die haben früher zusammen gespielt in einer Kneipe, White Horse Pub hieß es. Und 93 waren Gal and Drunk weltweit auf Tour mit im Vorprogramm für PJ Harvey, als PJ Harvey damals im Trio war. Und er meinte, das ist sehr schön gewesen, wieder zusammenzukommen und wieder zusammenzuarbeiten. Und er meinte, das hat nicht vergessen, wie schön es damals war. Und es ist einfach sehr schön, im Prinzip so den alten Kontakt wiederherstellen zu können. Und er meinte, letztendlich ist es immer eine Bereicherung, mit anderen Musikern zusammenzuarbeiten. Und er meinte, er hat zum Beispiel mit der deutschen Band Faust auch was gemacht und meinte, das war interessant, weil das was ganz anderes war. Und das war für ihn natürlich so im kreativen Sinne schon sehr interessant, weil er hat dadurch wirklich Erfahrung gesammelt. So you mentioned Faust before, but I mean, obviously your album doesn't sound like Faust, does it?
Definitely. No, I think most of that influence got fed into the last Gal and Drunk record, actually.
Now, just talking about Gal and Drunk for another second, I mean, if you go right back to the very early days, I mean, is there a particular track which you still really love, where you think, well, you know, that was something really special, that was when we really found our feet,
Some Fool's Mess, definitely.
Some Fool's Mess, okay. And which year was that? You'll have to help me now.
Good question. 1991?
I think you're right, yeah. Some Fool's Mess. So hören jetzt ein ganz altes Stück von Gal and Drunk, Some Fool's Mess von 1991. Some Fool's Mess von 91 von Gal and Drunk, ein Stück, das er besonders lieb in Erinnerung hat. It's interesting, really, going back to those days when you first started with Gal and Drunk. It was kind of like, it's not as if the music was hugely original, but it was original in the context of what was going on at the time, because you seemed to be really out of sync with what was going on at the time. There was nobody sounded like you at all at the time. That's the impression I got. You seemed to be doing your own thing and just carrying on regardless of anybody else.
Well,
is that what
it
felt like?
Certainly when we started it, we did feel very detached, not even, you know, purposefully so. We all lived in a house together and decided to try and make some music, and it came out like that. So I don't know if it was a reaction to not finding anything satisfying to go and see, but I don't think it really was that. It was just we wanted to do something, and it did seem to... jar with what was happening at the time, so it did, you know, it helped us stand out for better or worse, but it was just a fairly sort of natural development, really.
Did you actually more or less all have the same musical taste, or were you listening to completely different things?
The original drummer was very, very keen on be listening to sort of Isaac Hayes, and the maraca player Joe loved garage music. Mike Delanian loved jazz. I probably liked all of those. And, you know, obvious things, Suicide, the Velvet Underground, Stooges. And
so it explains a lot, actually, what you just said.
Right, OK.
Which is why I asked the question in the first place. Ja, ich fragte ihn, ob sie damals überhaupt gewusst haben, dass es ziemlich anders war, was sie damals gemacht haben mit Gallen Drunk. Zu dem Zeit ist es nicht, als ob die Musik radikal neu war, aber es ging von der Dame, zu dem Zeitpunkt war es die einzige Band, die so geklungen hat wie sie. Es fiel irgendwie aus dem Rahmen. Und ob sie sich bewusst darüber waren. Und sie meinte, ja, natürlich haben sie das wahrgenommen, aber das war keine bewusste Haltung. Das war nicht ihre Absicht von Anfang an, irgendwie aus der Reihe zu tanzen. Aber sie haben einfach in einem Haus zusammen gewohnt in London und die Musik ist dort entstanden und es ist einfach gekommen, wie es gekommen ist. Und sie konnten es nicht wirklich beeinflussen. Und sie haben schon unterschiedliche Geschmäcker gehabt, also von Isaac Hayes bis hin zu Garage-Musik, Jazz-Musik und dann Bands wie Suicide, Velvet Underground. Also sie haben nicht unbedingt alle denselben Geschmack gehabt. Und das ist vielleicht der Grund, warum so viele interessante Einflüsse da mit einfließen konnten. When it comes down to going back to the solo album now, is it a less of a worry for you making a solo album as a songwriter? You don't have to necessarily think in terms of innovation, which maybe is the case with Gallen Drunk, where you always got the impression that you were trying to push the music forward in some way. Can you just relax and just be as...
It was almost the opposite, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I felt so self-aware. Okay. I mean, I am anyway, but...
Yeah.
I mean, half the time, I'm almost too embarrassed to even play demos to the band for Gallen Drunk Records. But with this, I was... it was just a very, very sort of insular thing. And because the songs are more, really wanted it to be more actually of a, not traditional song format, but to be songs as such. And trying to get across an atmosphere or convey an emotion in a, probably a more succinct way is more difficult, and that it's obviously more revealing for the words. The words have got to be so much more focused in a way. I found it a lot more challenging.
Okay.
But the end result, a song like Dark Water off the record, compositionally, I'm so happy with that. Again, that oddly started as a bit of an improv, completely stuck, and played the first half and thought, oh, that sounds like a really nice soul song or something, and kept the format and then found the subject matter and then added a sort of big gospel outro, and just being able to take a bit of time to really develop an idea and to sort of make it as rich as you possibly can... was sort of both, as I say, more challenging and more rewarding.
I'm glad you mentioned that song because I had that lined up as the next song. It's my favourite on the album. In fact, it's my favourite on the album. So, Dark Water haben wir als nächstes Stück und das hat er glücklicherweise gerade sowieso erwähnt. Ich wollte sowieso gleich spielen. Er meinte, dass als das Projekt angefangen hat, er wollte nicht zwingend eine traditionelle Herangehensweise haben, aber es sollte schon songorientiert sein. Und er meinte, es war eine große Herausforderung, auch die Texte zu schreiben. Er meinte, seine Ausdrucksweise in den Texten mussten sehr fokussiert sein, sehr genau, um im Prinzip seinen seelischen Zustand wirklich darzustellen, weil es wirklich nur um ihn ging und nicht um die Band. Es war wirklich so seine Solo-Geschichte. Und Dark Water ist ein sehr repräsentatives Beispiel dafür. Er meinte, es fing eigentlich so ein Soul-Lied an, also mit der Struktur der Songs anfing, mit der Komposition. Und er wollte, dass es nachher auch so fast so Gospel-Feeling haben sollte. Und es sollte auch fast so reichhaltig wie möglich klingen. Es sollte so üppig und so saftig und üppig klingen, wie es überhaupt geht. Und das war für eine große Herausforderung für ihn. Und er glaubt auch, dass es ihm gut gelungen ist. I presume you mentioned that song because you consider it to be a particularly successful composition.
Yeah, kind of centerpiece of the record in a way. And we just played it live now with the same... some of the same people playing that were on the record, which is gorgeous. When we were in the studio and we'd got everything in place, and then a fantastic string arrangement by Sebastian Hoffman, who's from Hamburg, and then the choir coming in. It's all the things that we'd have probably done with a band with noise or just a distorted organ, just give it the full richness, give it a chance, you know, sort of all your fantasies of Lee Hazelwood records or gospel albums, what have you, and then put all that texture into something. It's just gorgeous to hear it come to life in the studio.
Ja, er ist schon sehr zufrieden mit diesem Song Dark Water. Er meinte, das ist einfach so, wie der Song in der Produktion entstanden ist. War wirklich großartig als Erfahrung. Sebastian Hoffmann aus Hamburg, ein Hamburger, er hat irgendwie die Streicherarrangements geschaffen und auch für so einen Chor gesorgt auch. Und er meinte, dass so ein Lied hätten sie wahrscheinlich bei Gull & Drunk alles nur mit so einer Art verzerrter Orgel hinbekommen. Und es war wirklich so befreiend, irgendwas ganz anderes zu machen. Also das wirklich mit Gull & Drunk nicht im geringsten vergleichbar war. Er meinte dann irgendwie, hat Lee Hazelwood erwähnt als Vorbild oder irgendwelche so gospelartige Klänge. Er meinte, das war wirklich so das Ziel, dass es einfach so, so dramatisch und so üppig wie möglich klingen sollte. Das hören wir jetzt, also Dark Water von dem Album The Starless Room von James Johnston. Es war Dark Water von James Johnston von dem Album The Starless Room, das im November bei uns erscheint. Do you sometimes think that it's been a benefit to you creatively not being hugely successful in commercial terms? Because, I mean, that has baggage which goes with it. And if you get to a reasonable level where you're respected and you're established and you've got like a cult status, is that in some way maybe easier to maneuver yourself as an artist, actually just to feel comfortable with yourself rather than if everything gets out of hand? Or would you have quite liked to have been really, really?
I don't know if I'd feel comfortable with myself, whether I had any notoriety or not, to be honest. And, you know, if you're stuck with an idea half-formed in your head and you go to the shops and back, and none of that really sort of crosses your mind. It's just like, how can I capture this? You know, what is it? Why is that chord wrong or blah, 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 you know? I've always just sort of lost in that process, really. So, again, it doesn't really cross my mind. I'm sort of just used to the way the things are, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. And when it comes down to your vocals as well, did you deliberately alter the way you sang for this album? I mean, it sounds a lot different to me than Gull & Drunk. I mean, was that, must have been a deliberate sort of stance of yours to say, well, this is going to be tackled in a different way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, once the formative ideas were there musically and writing on the piano rather than the guitar just to try and get away from, again, repeating myself, it was obvious that it had to have a different style of vocal and something I've sort of shied away from and hidden behind walls of feedback or you know, or that is what used to work. And it was just really nice to try something a bit different. And I was surprised how much confidence I had once I heard these ideas coming together. And I've really, really enjoyed it. And oddly enough, I can listen to this record almost like listening to someone else's record now, which is an absolute joy.
So you can put it on when you're having a coffee then, though?
I mean, I actually love listening to it. There's, you know, all the sound of it and the texture and everything and the atmosphere, I think, is really successfully done on it. And, usually I find listening to my own vocal, difficult. But on this record, no, not at all.
It's interesting because you played with Nick Cave's Bad Seeds for quite a long time. And Nick Cave told me once that he's still got misgivings about his voice. You know, because, yeah, you know, he's obviously not Pavarotti, you know, and he's not Frank Sinatra or whatever. So, and it's, people have probably got more used to his voice than he has.
But you, yeah, you know, and that's what people, you know, idiosyncrasies with people's vocals, that's what people respond to. That's what makes it so, you know, the humanity of something or the fragility of something or Bob Dylan's singing you know, like a live Nina Simone track or Lou Reed singing. I mean, all of these, you know, they're just so part of the person and the individual that you, for someone else, you just see straight past that. But, you know, if you're performing yourself, you obviously can be extremely self-aware. But that's why I find, you know, conversely doing this, I found it actually easier to sing in possibly a more conventional way, but just really enjoying the music and the sound.
Right, okay. Ja, er sagte, dass wenn es um das Thema Erfolg geht, er weiß, dass seine Band Gallen Drunk nie besonders kommerziell erfolgreich war. Sie haben immer so einen Kultstatus gehabt, auf den sie so stolz sein konnten. Aber ich fragte ihn, ob die Musik anders geworden wäre, also wenn er tatsächlich sehr viel Erfolg gehabt hätte. Hätte es die Musik irgendwie beeinflusst, waren sie vielleicht freier und irgendwie so unbelasteter, weil sie dann immer so ihren eigenen kleinen so Kultstatus-Welt hat. Er meinte, nee, er glaubt nicht, dass das überhaupt irgendwie so von Bedeutung ist. Er meinte, wenn man auf dem Weg zum Supermarkt ist, mit irgendeiner Idee im Kopf von Song und man mag sich dann verrückt, ja, wie kann ich das Problem lösen? Wie soll es klingen? Was soll ich jetzt machen? Er meinte, es hat dann eigentlich mit sowas, mit solchen Gedanken überhaupt nichts zu tun, ob es kommerziell erfolgreich ist oder ob es Potenzial hat, es kommerziell Erfolg oder nicht. Er meinte, das spielt dann keine Rolle. Und er meinte, was sein Gesang betrifft, er meinte schon, dass es war für ihn eine ganz bewusste Entscheidung, anders zu singen, nicht unbedingt konventionell, aber er wusste, dass es eine Art so Songwriter-Platte ist. Und er meinte, er hat sich ein bisschen versteckt hinter Feedback bei Gallen Drunk. Und er konnte immer so richtig rau klingen und vielleicht weniger diszipliniert sein. Und er meinte, es war für ihn schon eine interessante Erfahrung. Und er hat an Selbstvertrauen gewonnen, als er merkte, dass er auch schon richtig singen kann. Wobei er weiß, dass er kein perfekter Sänger ist. Er meinte aber, dass viele Leute fühlen sich gerade angezogen zu gewissen Skurrilitäten oder Exzentrizitäten, wenn die Sänger, er nannte Beispiele wie Bob Dylan, Lou Reed und Nina Simone und solche Leute, die im klassischen Sinne keine besonders begnadete Sänger sind, aber dennoch haben sie einen bestimmten eigenen Stil und eigene Farbe. Und gerade die Leute, die Musik konsumieren, die lieben es, wenn Leute ihre Verwundbarkeit zeigen in ihrer Stimme und da sind gewisse Menschlichkeit auch zeigen. So, maybe it's a bit early for you to kind of have an opinion, to gauge an opinion on the future when it comes down to Gallen Drunk. But I mean, yeah. This is not even out yet. But can you see into the future in that sense? Do you think, are you a bit worried that this album might take anything away from Gallen Drunk?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's all I don't even really think. I know. Obviously, it is a solo record. I just think of it as a record. But I'd say my sort of current focus is to do something else like this again, to do another record like this. But then again, you know, then in the future, coming back to Gallen Drunk, that'll bring a new freshness to that as well. So, you know, it's just a matter of. It's a matter of time, really, isn't it?
Right, okay. And basically, the most important thing, you're still enjoying what you do.
Absolutely. God, I love it.
Yeah, and you managed to stay true to yourself all these years, haven't you, as well?
Yes, that's probably... but I don't know if that's to my expense.
To your detriment. Yeah.
Quite. Financial detriment.
Yeah.
No, totally. And, I'm really proud of this record. And very much looking forward to doing more, whatever it may be, really.
Okay. Ja, ich fragte ihn, ob er sich Sorgen macht, dass das Soloalbum irgendwie die Zukunft von Gallen Drunk beeinträchtigen könnte, ob vielleicht die Zukunft von Gallen Drunk gefährdet sein könnte deshalb. Aber er glaubt nicht. Also momentan kann er sich schon vorstellen, dass er erstmal vielleicht wieder so ein Soloalbum macht, bevor er dann irgendwas mit Gallen Drunk wieder macht. Aber das steht alles in den Sternen. Aber wenn es ein bisschen dauert, bis es was Neues von Gallen Drunk gibt, ist es auch egal, weil er ist in der Zwischenzeit mit irgendwas beschäftigt, irgendwas, was er liebt, und es macht ihm sehr viel Freude. Und es würde nur bedeuten, dass er mit neuer Energie irgendwann tatsächlich ein neues Projekt mit Gallen Drunk starten könnte. Und er sagt schon, dass er sich so selbst treu geblieben ist und das vielleicht zum finanziellen Nachteil gewesen, aber er ist schon immer überzeugt gewesen, dass er so ein wahrhaftiger Künstler gewesen ist. So, what would you like to hear to finish off then? Your choice.
My choice. I was about to say, why don't you pick one? Because I was trying to remember what's actually on that we could play.
Okay,
I could.
Yeah, St. Martha's. I really like.
I love that track.
Yeah, it's one of my favourites. Dark Water is my absolute favourite, but probably St. Martha's my second favourite. So.
Yeah, I really like Heart and Soul, and yeah, St. Martha's. I'd certainly.
Okay.
Go for that.
Any particular story behind that?
There is actually. I mean, for the most part, I like the sort of opaqueness or the mystery of people's lyrics. And it's, I mean, for example, I read something recently about the Hyacinth House, the Doors song, which I think is a beautiful track, and you know, it's quite mysterious. And then there was an interview with it's either John Dens, but I think it was Robbie Krieger, saying, "Oh, it's just, you know, it was about my house. It had some hyacinths outside, and and the lions actually was, oh, I just had this sort of wild cat, and it kept biting people, and someone was taking loads of time in the bathroom, so that's why is the bathroom clear, and then all the mystery's gone." So I try, in a way, it can sort of take away.
You don't have to give it away.
The sort of blurring thing, but it's just a place near where I grew up, actually.
Okay. Right, okay, we'll leave it at that then.
Okay. Yeah, I was christened there, actually.
Okay.
And my father's buried there. So that's basically it.
Right. So dieses Lied hat schon irgendeine Geschichte dahinter. Manchmal erzögert, bevor überhaupt wirklich erklärt, worum ein Lied geht, weil es in der Vergangenheit enttäuscht worden von Bands wie The Doors, die eine ganz banale Erklärung hatten für Songs wie Hyacinth House. Und er meinte, das hat ihm irgendwie eher genervt und das hat es alles so entmystifiziert. Und manchmal ist es ganz gut, wenn es ein bisschen rätselhaft bleibt, ein bisschen mysteriös. Aber er meinte, in diesem Fall, St. Martha's ist da, wo er aufgewachsen ist, in der Nähe. Er ist dort getauft worden, sein Vater ist da begraben. Und das Lied also hat schon eine besondere Bedeutung für ihn deshalb. Right, well, thanks very much for coming out to talk to me. I appreciate
absolute
that.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and hope to see you again very soon in Hamburg, then live.
Yeah, great, know? Absolutely.
So, hören wir jetzt zum Schluss St. Martha's von dem Album The Starless Room von James Johnson, war mein Studiogast heute Abend. Das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.